Kim Stanley Robinson selected our contest winners. He's a writer who has spent a lot of time imagining the future. He writes literary science fiction, and he's best known for his award-winning Mars trilogy. The New Yorker profiled him recently and called him not just the greatest living science fiction writer, but one of our greatest political novelists. Steve Paulson sat down to talk with him.
Stan, we just heard the story you chose as the grand prize winner of our flash fiction contest. What impressed you about this story?
Well, it seemed to me that it really caught what could happen with algorithms of social relations. And there's a lot of people meeting online so that the advertisements for the next service that could be offered, like, okay, we'll wreck your marriage, but then we'll give you new relationships and on we go to make it all commercialized and monetized.
Well, I think what kind of surprised our judges who read, in fact, all 750 stories that were originally submitted was how many were so dystopian. I mean, the sense that a lot of people have a pretty bleak view of the future.
Well, it's interesting because this is a little bit backwards to science fiction of, say, the 1930s and 40s. Golden Age science fiction was often written by a kind of engineering class. Young men, some of them, say like Jack Williamson, you know, they'd grown up in the back country of New Mexico, and then Astounding Magazine would come in the mailbox and show them the future. And their dream life was, when I get into the future, I'll also be in the solar system. Very exciting. So science fiction is always perfect at expressing the mood of the time. So now the mood of the time, I think, especially since the 2008 crash, is very dark and gloomy. Young people look towards what the future might be like, and they don't see this burgeoning world of more and more opportunities. We call it the precariat now, the way there used to be the proletariat. Now there's the precariat. It expresses a mood very accurately.
Well, I mean, one thing that's striking about your fiction and the way you've talked about your writing is you are very upfront describing yourself as a utopian writer, which is not a label that a lot of writers want to embrace. I mean, there's a sense that
yes, that's for sure.
I mean, that utopias are naive or too politically narrow, as if, you know, the truth has been found. So what do you see as the value of utopian literature?
Well, one of the hits against utopias, which is political disguised as aesthetic, is that they're bound to be boring, as if life without disaster and oppression would be boring, which I think is both wrong and a sneaky way of trying to avoid the idea of politics, and especially politics in literature.
So what about all these apocalyptic stories that we see now? I mean, do they have appeal to you?
No, but I can fully understand them because they're diagnostic. They're expressing the feeling of the moment. Because our sense of social security and of history going forward into a better space is utterly challenged by political injustice and by climate change. But somebody's got to tell the positive history of how would we get to a better place. What my project is to envision things going right. You can then figure out what would we do right now that would put us on that course, and then you can try to enact it.
Well, I want to ask you about your series of books, the Mars Trilogy, probably what you are best known for in these books. Humans have colonized and terraformed the planet Mars, and partly what's so striking about these stories is, I mean, you've created this elaborate scenario of scientifically playing out how this could actually happen, and you've also played out the political possibilities. I mean, really, this is about how to create a new society, potentially a better society. And I'm wondering which of those strains of your writing interests you more. Is it the future science, or is it imagining a future politics?
Well, I think they both, to me, they're so combined with each other, it would be hard to de-strand those two. I must say the science is really, really interesting to me because there's always something new coming up. And then the political stuff, it seems to always come down to the same thing. I mean, I'm an American leftist. It's a matter of more justice, more democracy. So that is another challenge. Can you envision it? This idea of a utopia happening on another planet is a sort of a story space that you go into. Okay, on Mars, we can do things right, and it will serve as an illustration or an example for people back on Earth.
Well, I'd love to get a taste of this. And there's a passage in your first book in the trilogy, Red Mars, where some of the founding scientists are talking about how politics can come out of physical design. Could you read that?
Sure. They're still on the way there, so they're in the spaceship on their way there. And Arkady says, buildings are the template of a society. They're rooms, Sachs pointed out. Arkady looked around, pulling people into the discussion with his gaze. The arrangement of a building shows what the designer thinks should go on inside it. We saw that at the beginning of the voyage.
when Russians and Americans were segregated into Taurus D and B. We were supposed to remain two entities, you see. It will be the same on Mars. Buildings express values. They have a sort of grammar, and rooms are the sentences.
Well, what don't you like about the design of the first shelters? John asked, looking interested.
They are rectangular, Arkady said. The conventional shape, with workspace separated from living quarters as if work were not part of life. And the living quarters are taken up mostly by private rooms, with hierarchies expressed in that leaders are assigned larger spaces. A very conventional example of American business thinking, if I may say so. There was a groan, and Phyllis said, "Do we have to get political, Arkady?"
"Everything is political," Arkady said at their backs. "Nothing more so than this voyage of ours. We are beginning a new society. How could it help but be political?"
Oh, that is a great passage. One thing that I find so fascinating about your project of how to imagine a future society where maybe there's something different than capitalism happening, I think there's a common assumption that liberal capitalism has triumphed. It sort of defeated all of the competing systems, and for all of its problems, for all of the inequality, nothing better has come along, and there's sort of no other way to structure a society. You don't believe that, do you?
No, that's Thatcher. There is no alternative. But there are alternatives. They aren't easy. Here's what I would say about capitalism. It's wrecking the planet, and eventually on a finite planet, what you get is that no matter how much you pay, you can't deacidify the ocean. You can't restore the environment. You can't bring back extinct species. So what I'm saying is that our wonderful liberal capitalism is actually a Ponzi scheme, a multi-generational Ponzi scheme, where the future generations are going to be left holding the bag of a wrecked planet. I'm not saying solutions are easy, but I'm saying we need a different system.
So who has the intellectual power to dream up a different system that actually could supplant capitalism?
Well, all of us together. It's a crowdsourced thing. But really, to me, it's the scientific community. If economics were treated as a form of ecology.
Wait, are you suggesting that the scientists are the ones who might be able to come together, agree on certain things, and come up with a better system than the capitalist system?
That's certainly what I say to the scientists. They're never really very happy to hear that. One of the things I would suggest to the scientists and to everybody is that we treat the necessities of life as public utilities so that food, water, shelter, clothing, healthcare, and education are all public utilities. And then the stuff on the side, let that be the capitalist playground so that you can do your entrepreneurial stuff with toys, with stuff that aren't life and death. So you don't make healthcare a capitalist playground where you extort value from other people. You make iPhones a place where you play that game. I actually think that if everybody on this planet had adequacy, became their own entrepreneur of their own little sidebar game that they wanted to promote in the world, we would have an explosion of creativity.
Kim Stanley Robinson, talking with Steve Paulson. Robinson is the Hugo and Nebula Award-winning author of the Mars Trilogy and 2312. His most recent book is called Shaman. Coming up, towers that are 12 miles high, machines that record your dreams, and the legacy of Star Trek. I'm Ann Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio, NPRI, Public Radio International.